Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 244 for the Love of the Game on the Bleed Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. March Madness is right around the corner. NBA season is about to re-tip off after the All-Star break, and Bet Online has you covered for all of that. Not just basketball, hockey, baseball futures. You name it, BetOnline has it. So head to BetOnline today, become part of the team, and remember to use promo code BLEAV for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to get 50% on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. With that said, episode 244 for the Love of the Game. Let's get this work.
Them windows tinted. Who them girls you be with when you be riding through? Man, I ain't got nothing to prove. I paid my dues, breaking the rules.
Episode 244 for the Love of the Game on the Bleed Podcast Network with yours truly, ATH. It's Aaron Tobin Hess back in the saddle, back behind the mic, and we're in a little bit of a dead period in the sports calendar. Super Bowl is come and gone. NBA was on All-Star break. All-Star weekend was this weekend, and we're going to get to that in a second. Hockey season is in full swing. The New York Rangers had an awesome win in the Stadium Series against the New York Islanders. Come from behind, win 6-5. Unbelievable win by then. But this weekend, this past weekend, the highlight was NBA All-Star Weekend. And I'm just going to come out and say it. It was flat-out trash. Absolute flaming hot garbage. A terrible, terrible product to watch. Just terrible. Absolutely terrible. We'll start with All-Star Saturday night. The skills competition. This weird format with teams. Like, it go back to 2007, 2008 range when they first really started doing the skills competition. When dribbling, passing, shooting. It was an individual competition. The obstacle course made sense. Why are we getting too cute? Why are we getting too cute? So I don't understand what they're doing with this team's nonsense. Just play the hits. Play the classics. Go back to that. Then we go into the three-point competition. A good crew of shooters. Damian Lillard wins the title again. But then there's a secondary competition between Sabrina Ionescu of the New York Liberty of the WNBA, who had an unbelievable showing in her three-point competition in the WNBA All-Star weekend last year. So she challenges Steph Curry, the greatest shooter in basketball history, and they go at it, shooting from the same NBA three-point line. Sabrina gets to shoot the women's ball. Steph shoots the men's ball. That was actually the one saving grace of the weekend, was that competition. Sabrina Same score as the winning score for the men with Damian Lillard. Steph Curry gets a 29. Fine. That was awesome. We're going to get to why that was awesome in a second, because it's part of my larger point of why this weekend sucked. Mac McClung in the dunk contest gets Jaylen Brown in the finals, and he shouldn't have even been there, but whatever. And it was just a dud, an absolute dud. And then you had the game itself. I don't even know what the final score was. I think it was like 216 to 186 or something of that nature. I turned it off because it was an absolute farce. It was an embarrassment of NBA basketball. Embarrassment, an absolute embarrassment. The All-Star weekend, which used to be something I looked forward to, it was always around my birthday. I kind of used to plan birthday parties around viewing it. And it was just garbage. Just garbage. They changed the skills competition, as I mentioned. I don't even know who won. I think the team Indiana Pacers won it, but who really cares? The three-point contest, they went from the classic five balls, five spots, five shots, with the last shot being a money ball, to having a money rack, having a starry ball for a deep ball. Like, get that shit out of my face. Go back to the original format, because Lauri Markkanen made more shots in his round than Damian Lillard, and he didn't even advance because of the stupid money ball rule with it having its own rack and the starry. Like, get this shit out of my face. Go back to the original. And then the dunk contest. The judges were terrible. Gary Payton was clueless. Dominique Wilkins was clueless. I don't even know who the other judges were. They were fucking clueless. They pushed Jaylen Brown forward when he was doing these garbage-ass dunks. And Jaime Jaquez got robbed. Jacob Toppin got robbed. So Brown advances. Mac McClung ends up winning. But it was just blah. So freaking blah. And then the game, which was even worse than everything else that happened All-Star Saturday night. But I want to talk about the game. The game used to mean something. It used to be a measuring stick of great players measuring themselves against one another. The greatest pickup game you would see all year. That's what it used to be. Go back in the 80s and 90s and watch guys like Bird, Magic, Jordan, Barkley, Ewing, all these guys cared about that game. They would play defense. They would even throw double teams. And yeah, not all the games were super competitive, but they weren't a laughing stock. It wasn't an embarrassment. It wasn't a complete farce. And it wasn't a slap in the face to all the fans and to the commissioner. Like last night was. Last night was a slap in the face. Luka Doncic's performance last night was a slap in the face. Nikola Jokic, we all love him, but that was a slap in the face. The way Shai Gilgeous-Alexander sleptwalked through that game was a slap in the face. The fact that Damian Lillard is pulling up from half court with regularity and Donovan Mitchell is shooting 30-foot one-legged shots. It's a slap in the face. Wasn't that long ago, 2001. You know, back when it was East-West, I know we went back to that format after the draft. We went away from the Elam ending. We now had a normal game, four quarters. Whoever wins, you know, after four quarters wins. Normal stuff. But go back to 2001 and watch the way that game ended. Kobe Bryant's getting double teamed. Double teamed. You see the exuberance on the Eastern Conference All-Stars face. Even those who are on the bench. Look at Latrell Sprewell reacting to the win. Look at Allen Houston for the Knicks reacting to the win. Vince Carter reacting to the win after Tim Duncan misses at the buzzer. And Chris Webber misses the follow-up. They cared. They cared. They had pride. Go back to 2003, Jordan's last All-Star game. That last possession where he hit the shot over Sean Marion. Sean Marion is up in his grill playing real defense. And yeah, you would say send Jordan out on top. Storybook ending. If they wanted to end the game there, fine. But no, Kobe Bryant has to come back down, get fouled, shooting a three to tie the game by Jermaine O'Neal, and it goes into overtime. And he was ruthless enough to win it in overtime. Compare that to what you watched Sunday night. Night and day. Night and day. And we can talk about the format of the game, whether you want to play true four quarters or you want to do the Elam ending. I know the first time they did the Elam ending, it was great. It was a novel idea. Awesome. And then after that, the game regressed back to trash. And last year was hot garbage. So Adam Silver wanted to switch it up because he knew it was terrible. So he went back to the old format, East-West, no draft because they didn't take the draft seriously. East-West, play a normal four quarters. Maybe that will spruce it up. Even worse. Even worse this year than it was last year. And you know why that is? Because the players don't give a shit. This generation of NBA players might be the most talented generation of NBA players in NBA history. What they can do on a court is maybe more impressive in terms of skills and shot making than any generation in NBA history before that. But it is the least competitive group of guys in the history of professional sports. They have absolutely no competitive pride. None. None whatsoever. They have no desire to put on a show, a legit show, for the fans that allows them to make the money they make. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. And it only started to happen when Kobe Bryant was on his last legs and couldn't be the alpha male that he was before. Kobe set the tone in these games, just like Michael Jordan set the tone in these games before him. And Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, and you didn't even need tone setters back in the 80s because they actually gave a shit. They had pride. They had collective, competitive pride. And it didn't matter that they weren't getting paid. They understood that this was for the league that affords them a certain lifestyle, and they just innately cared. And this group of players, led by LeBron James, just lacks competitive pride. They don't have it. LeBron had it when he was taking his P's and Q's from Kobe. But then LeBron James ushered in this buddy-buddy bullshit, and that has trickled down to this generation of NBA player who looks up to him. Now, LeBron has been a great ambassador for the league. I don't want to trash him specifically because, you know, he does handle himself with class on the court. He doesn't cheat the game. He's always in shape. He always gives 110%. But the fact that he can't dictate that NBA players should play hard in an all-star game is embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Make no mistake, his lack of giving a crap trickles down. And it's also on Kevin Durant. It's on Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's on Steph Curry. Those guys have to be the guys to drive the competitive edge in this game. And it's also on Adam Silver, who I've maintained is the worst commissioner in professional sports. Because Adam Silver, for the better part of a decade, has tried to be buddy-buddy with the players, has tried to be their best friend, and not their employer, and not their boss. And he has given them way too much leeway, which led to load management. And again, the general managers, the owners had to do with it also. It's not just the players. But the players took full advantage. Full advantage. Adam Silver tried to be their best friend. He tried to move away from what David Stern was doing and rule with a little bit of an iron fist. You know what? The players in David Stern's era respected the hell out of David Stern. They never would have put on a performance as dog shit as what happened this past Sunday night in front of David Stern. Because David Stern knew that the product needed to sell on television, that the fans who watch the games cause the players to make what they make. Adam Silver seems to have lost that. Seems to have forgotten that. And now he's trying to make it better. But guess what? The toothpaste is out of the tube, Adam. It's out of the tube. You gave these guys an inch, they took a mile. Embarrassing. Embarrassing. And now I was hearing all these solutions, whether take away the three-point shot in the game, then it's not a real game. The players should be compensated more, like the in-season tournament, which is ridiculous because the in-season tournament probably won't last very long. The players shouldn't have to be compensated more to play in the All-Star game. They should understand that they should be giving back and be grateful that they make the salaries that they make. The bottom line is that the All-Star game isn't going to be good unless the players give a shit. And this group of players needs a real slap in the face and learn to give a shit. Because eventually, the ratings are going to drop. The negotiation rights are going to go a certain way, and that collective piece of the pie that the players get in terms of their salaries is going to go down if you continually spit in the face of your customer. And that's what the NBA players in this game did yesterday. They spat in the face of the customer. I am a 0.1% NBA fan on this planet. In the third quarter, I turned it off to catch up on The Bachelor because that was dog shit. Absolute dog shit. You thought it couldn't get worse than last year, and it was infinitely worse. Infinitely worse. And Adam Silver said it was going to be a competitive game, and it wasn't. So they basically spit in his face, and you could tell how annoyed he was presenting the MVP trophy to Damian Lillard, by the way, who's having the worst season of his career since his rookie year, who can't be bothered to play defense, but in an exhibition game, got to pull up from 35 feet with nobody giving a crap. Awesome. Congratulations to you, dude. You're a loser. That's loser's mentality. It was just terrible. Everything was terrible. And these guys are all concerned about losing, that they don't even try to win. They don't even try hard. It's a malaise. Look at the dunk contest roster. Go back to Saturday night. Who's in the dunk contest? Every great player who was a high flyer, whether it was Dr. J, whether it was Michael Jordan, whether it was Dominique Wilkins, it was Kobe Bryant, it was Vince Carter, they understood that they had to carry the mantle. That it wasn't just about them. It was about the league. And they had a sense of duty to compete and show out. The fact that LeBron James thumbed his nose at the dunk contest tells you everything you need to know about LeBron James, that he's just all about himself, and his brand. And he didn't want to lose because his reputation would take a hit. Steph Curry didn't have to accept the challenge of a WNBA player. Because if he would have lost, he would have gotten clowned online. Clowned. But credit to him that he had the foresight to understand that maybe this is good for the game. And that it's bigger than just Steph Curry. And he showed out. And he won. And credit to Sabrina Ionescu because she was incredible. But credit to Steph Curry that he was able to risk his reputation and risk getting roasted online to try something. And he ultimately won the weekend because his shooting contest against Sabrina Ionescu was the only good thing about All-Star Weekend this past weekend. Everything else was hot garbage. And yes, LeBron James has a lot to do with it and his persona. The players have a lot to do with it, But Adam Silver gets some blame too. And I know he's trying to correct it, but I got news for Adam. Nothing's going to change unless the players give a shit. So figure out how to make the players give a shit. It's the most coddled group of professional athletes that lack competitive juice that there's ever been. I mean, take a look at what went down since the 65 game rule to qualify for awards and postseason awards and all NBA stuff. Like all these guys who are going to be qualifying, they're making max dollars anyway. And then for Jaylen Brown, who's maybe the 35th best player in the league, but somehow made an all-star team this year, has the audacity to say that 65 games is too strict, that it should maybe be 58. Get the fuck out of my face, dude. Get out of my face. The fact that this group of players is compensated the way they are and they couldn't care less about the consumer who consumes their product, it's embarrassing. And the fact that they don't have enough pride to actually want to do their jobs and play the game that apparently they love to play is embarrassing. Shame on the NBA. And I love the NBA. And this season largely has been a really good season. But this past weekend, aside for Sabrina and Steph going head-to-head, was dog shit. And as much as Adam Silver can try and fix it, he can't. The players have to have an innate sense of pride. And I don't know who's going to instill it in them because LeBron James isn't doing it because he's ushered in this crap. Anyway, I thought last year was going to be the last year I was ranting about the All-Star game. Well, we're back at it this year because I can't stress just how terrible that was this past weekend. All right, we're going to continue this with a recurring guest who I haven't spoken to in a while. We're going to talk about maybe some All-Star stuff, and he has some burning questions that he wanted to answer. We're going to go through that for the NBA post-All-Star weekend, second half of the season. We'll get to him in just a matter of moments. So I wasn't sure I was actually going to do a podcast this week. I was so disenchanted by NBA All-Star weekend. I thought I was going to maybe just do a solo show, maybe take the week off. And then a recurring guest out of the blue texted me asking if I was still doing a show because he wanted to come on and talk some NBA stuff. So obviously I was like, all right, we're in. Let's do it. So none other than Johnny Nolman is back, recurring guest. Johnny, what's good, bud? How you doing? Thanks for reaching out this week.
All is good. I think this is an emergency podcast for the NBA wasting our time last night. And then also, we're starting the second half of the season. Some fake NBA fans say this is when the season officially starts after All-Star break. So let's chalk it up and let's talk some basketball and what we expect to see post All-Star break.
So I actually think this NBA season has been incredibly interesting in a sense where I think there's more parity in the NBA right now than I think there's been in a long, long time. A long, long time. I made this case last week. But before we get into all that, as great as the NBA season has been so far, All-Star Weekend was an absolute disaster. So where do you want to start with this? Because I talked about it in the monologue a little bit. This really sucked. And I have some, you know, basic reasons why I think it sucks. So where do you want to go with this? Do you want to start with the Saturday night or do you want to start with the actual game?
I was just thinking about the actual game, but I think it goes it all comes from kind of the same theme that like what Anthony Edwards said today is like I just want to chill this weekend. Okay, so you want to chill, have a great chill weekend, but then when you get on the court and you go to your competition, or let's say whatever competition you're in, and you just don't try. And you don't have any pride in the game itself, then it's horrible. So if you start from Saturday night, I mean, it starts out like, who wants to be the best? Like, it starts from ego. Like, who's the best 3-point shooter in the NBA? It's certainly not Damian Lillard. Like, I know he won, but it's certainly not Damian Lillard. So, like, Where are you, Steph Curry? Where are you? I shouldn't even say Clay anymore, but where are you? All the other guys that you're really the best 3-point shooters in the NBA. You should want to be in this. If you in the dunk contest, like, where is the Vince Carter? Is like the real best dunker in the NBA. Can you stand up? Or maybe go away from these competitions because no one cares anymore. So just thinking about Saturday night, like, it's either the you get the best to do it, because I don't want to watch like some average 3-point shooters go at it at a three-point shootout. I want to watch the absolute best 3-point shooters, or just don't have the competitions.
So here's what I'll say. I actually, you know, the 3-point contest has become sort of the crown jewel now of NBA Saturday night. And I can understand why Steph Curry doesn't want to do it every year, because he should win it every single year, as we saw in his performance against Sabrina Ionescu, you know, in sort of like the bonus competition. Well, and I just want to put a pin in that for a second. But, you know, I do think the 3-point contest gets a good, you know, group of players doing it. And I think those guys actually have pride in it. My issue with the 3-point contest is enough with the stupid starry balls or the Mountain Dew balls, whatever, like, enough with the entire rack being a money ball rack to juice the numbers and to juice the scores. Like, it's a very simple concept. You have five racks, you have five balls, right? The money ball being the last ball on each rack. Just go back to basics.
Yeah.
Like, who needs the starry ball? Who needs any of that? Just go back to basics. It's five spots, five shots in each time. You know, the last one is a bonus, and see who makes the most amount of threes. Like, I think Lauri Markkanen made the most number of shots. He didn't even advance. Like, how stupid is this?
Yeah, totally. It's a really good point. I just, especially with the NBA now, like, 3-point shooting is like cooler than dunking, right? And Steph Curry made 3-point shooting cooler than dunking. And it's guys of all sizes, not just guards and forwards anymore. It's really centers, like, in this competition. So it should be the coolest thing out there. And you're right. I think it comes from this. And then I think it's just the overall chillness to the weekend, and not bringing your competitiveness to the weekend. And then to the dunk contest, I think we've seen every dunk already. Like, am I crazy? Like,
I think there's an element to that, but
if he jumps over this person, or he jumps over this rapper who's there, I don't think that's cool. I get it.
Yeah, but I mean, for example, like, Jacob Toppin did a dunk, his second dunk that he missed the first one. Like, we hadn't seen that before. That was an awesome dunk, and the judges were just like, nah, Jacob Toppin can't win because he's Jacob Toppin.
Yeah.
You know, the judges were terrible. They didn't even know what was going on. They felt the need to push Jaylen Brown to the next round because he's an NBA player to go against Mac McClung. You know, Jaylen Brown is an all-star game participant, even though he has the charisma of an ant. And I actually, I can't stand him. He's pretty terrible. We've seen a lot of the dunks, but like, if you saw, you know, some of the stuff that was coming out of the G League showcase, you saw crazy stuff there too. And to me, it's more about, and I guess this goes back, you know, to the actual game itself, which was an absolute farce. This is the least competitive group of NBA superstars in the history of pro sports. They have not an ounce of competitive pride in them. They don't seem to care about the tradition of the sport, and that comes from LeBron James. And when LeBron James thumbed his nose at the dunk contest all those years ago, because guys in his position, whether it was Dominique Wilkins, whether it was Julius Erving, whether it was Michael Jordan, whether it was Kobe Bryant, they all did it, right? They all did it. And he didn't do it. And Kobe took the All-Star game ultra seriously. He used it as a measuring stick. He was basically like, This is a dick measuring contest, right? All the best guys in the league are going to play, and we're going to see who's the best, right? And his persona, his, you know, intensity kind of fueled the game. Yeah, they weren't always close, but it wasn't an out-and-out travesty. Like, guys tried.
Yeah. And
LeBron, with this buddy-buddy nonsense that he's instilled in all of these guys, that basically being competitive and being an ambassador to the league doesn't really matter. And I'm not saying LeBron isn't a good ambassador to the NBA. He's been a great player for a long time, right? And he's generally handled himself on the court with, you know, class and dignity. But in terms of like this and the malaise that he's like kind of brought where this stuff doesn't matter, like, he's to blame for this. And Adam Silver is also to blame for this, because all he wants to do is to be best friends with the players. And he's given them an inch. They've taken a mile in multiple different things. And he's trying to get them to play hard. And they couldn't even give a shit to play hard when he promised them after last year's debacle that it would be better. And this year was worse.
Right. I think it's that these players like think they've already proven themselves, and like they think they're all that just because they might have more, like a young guy in the NBA might have more money than any young guy's ever had in like professional sports. That's the money, much money these guys are making, and their marketing and just how they're just crowned a legend. Like Luka Doncic, I know you're a great player. Like I have a lot of respect for you. I have some things that I have against you. Like, I think you need to get in better shape. I think you need to play a different style of basketball, but that's a whole different conversation. But just his overall, like, I literally don't care about this game. I'm going to take a half court shot, which was actually one of the only comical moments of this game, was when he took a full court shot in the middle of a real play.
And then tweeted 2-for-1 analytics, which was funny, but like such a spit in the face.
You haven't proved yourself. Like, you haven't. What have you done in this league? Like, who's the only person who maybe shouldn't be like, maybe Steph and LeBron, like, go a little, like, they're a little older, but like, come to play. And let's go back to like the 2020 All-Star game was fantastic. That was the first year they did the captains, and people felt a ton of pride that, like, the based on where they were drafted, that they wanted to prove themselves. And these were the best 10 players in the league on the court. And it was a brawl. Like, it was so intense. And it came down to, like, them getting a mismatch on, like, Kyle Lowry on Anthony Davis and, like, force feeding it into the post and, like, AD winning it at the line. And, like, people were pissed it was finished at the line. Like, the Elam ending was cool. That was cool. The drafting was cool. I think where players stopped, and then last year was horrible again, so he changed it back and try to make it like a retro also game, West versus East. But you need to make incentives again. You need to make it a way to take a person, like these players take a person again and like be offended that they're not a top 10 player in the league. And they're not, and like, if a player didn't come to play up to par, like you weren't playing last in the Elam ending of the All-Star game, like you were like, I should be on this freaking court. So make the players take it personally again. But I think the other problem is that these players are doing everything in their power. Like, I'm a legend already. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm gonna win a ring this year. I'm gonna win a ring in the future. I'm gonna lead the league and be top five in scoring. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't need to come out to play. Like, I'm just chilling. Like, you haven't proven yourself half these guys, or like 90% of these guys, or even if you're a competitor, you're always reproving yourself every night and every second you're out there. Like, come on.
That's what it is. It's their, they have no competitive pride, and they have not been good business partners with the league. Like, you've seen it with the load management stuff, and you know, that's been a little bit better this year because there was a financial hit to the teams. And again, that's not just on the players when they were doing the load management. It's also on the ownership groups. It's also the general managers. They're complicit in it as well, right? So I can't just dump on the players. But like, at a certain point, when you get in between the lines, like, you should want to play. You should want to play, and you should want to prove that you're the best. And this notion that the players need to be incentivized more to play in an All-Star game, like, Like, go back to the 90s. Go back to 2001, right? That famous All-Star game when Stephon Marbury and Kobe Bryant went at him. They were throwing double teams at Kobe in the last minute and a half. Throwing double teams. Go to 2003, MJ's last All-Star game, when Kobe couldn't let Jordan go off into the sunset after he hit that shot over Sean Marion. By the way, was an incredible defensive possession by Sean Marion. He had to force a foul to go to overtime. Like, where's that? It's a mentality thing. Like, the Elam ending was great, a novelty, awesome. But it just comes back to the players. If the players aren't going to give a shit, it doesn't matter what structure the game looks like. It's not going to matter. Elam ending, normal, East-West, draft, who can, whatever. If they're not going to have the professional pride to care like the predecessors cared, then none of this means anything.
Right, and that's why, to me, it's a miracle that the NBA season is back to being amazing, because we took a few years off when LeBron was just making the finals every year and the Warriors were just the only super team. And from we were missing competitive seasons. Now these games are competitive in the regular season. And it's a miracle, because you see some of these guys just being so chill, some of these games, like, being okay losing. But in overall, from a league perspective, the regular season is having its best year that I've remembered in a very, very long time. And you're right, it's because of the parity. And it's because these games really matter. Like, the West is so tough. If you go and just chill for three games in a row, like, you're in the window of, like, going into a playing game, or the Jazz or Rockets are waiting to knock you out of the playoffs. Like, it's so crazy. So I think that's overall a better sign that the league itself is extremely competitive. But it's a real shame, because the last thing I want to say in the All-Star game is that, like, it used to be like a guy like Anthony Edwards, an up and coming star, is like, who am I taking out on the other team? Like, what, like, older veteran am I taking out on the other team that I'm going to have my moment, my shot, my whatever, as like, and I'm going to, or like the West is down and like at half, and like, they need me to come back. And like, everyone's like, Anthony Edwards, out of all guys playing on the same team as LeBron, KD, and Curry, is the one who brought them back. Like, this is his moment, and he's saying, this is my league, and it's going to be my league. Where is that? Like, you're young, Anthony Edwards. Like, you have young legs. Like, you're not tired.
And not only that, and just to continue on Anthony Edwards, sorry to cut you off, he's one of those guys that's a super competitive guy. He is.
Yeah.
But the problem is that when the top down, and this is squarely about LeBron, when LeBron stopped giving a shit about the NBA All-Star game, when Kobe stopped being a marquee player in the league, because Kobe, he set the tone. LeBron doesn't care to set the tone. And it's on him. It's on Kevin Durant. It's on Giannis. It's on Steph Curry to give a shit enough about the game to make it competitive. And then guys will follow. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going through the motions was embarrassing. Embarrassing. It was even more embarrassing than his performance last year.
This is his year also. This is his year to win MVP. This is his team's year. Like, make this All-Star game yours. Go out, win MVP. And, like, but someone on the West needs to say, like, I'm scoring 20. And Towns tried to do it. I mean, Towns was a disgrace the All-Star game, how much he shot the ball. He literally shot every single time. I cannot watch him. I could barely watch him play in Minnesota, because I think he takes the ball away too much from Anthony Edwards. That was, he shot so much. But at least he said, like, I'm going to try to bring us back. At least he said that. And I was also pissed that my boy Brunson did not get the ball enough. It should have been his time. Dame started over him, which was a shame. And Dame trying to steal his thunder. Brunson should have taken all those shots. All Dame shots should have went to Brunson, and Brunson should have won MVP of that game.
Yeah, congratulations, Damian Lillard. You make shots when it doesn't mean anything, right? In a pickup game, you can shoot from half court when it doesn't matter, yet you're having your worst statistical season since your rookie year. Your team is kind of floundering, and you couldn't even care to play a lick of defense during the regular season, expecting Giannis and Brook Lopez to clean up your mess. But yeah, go right ahead. Show out in the All-Star game. I hated everything about this All-Star game weekend.
Yeah. It was a total waste of time.
You know what? If they want to repeat this, I shouldn't say chill.
Because the Steph versus the WNBA player was awesome.
And you know why that was awesome? You know why that was awesome? And I credit both of them, first of all, because Sabrina Ionescu, who's obviously a tremendous basketball player, tremendous. And I know the WNBA gets crapped on a lot, and I don't want to talk about, you know, gender roles, and that's not what this is about, right? But she could easily just, like, put up a terrible performance, would have been like, oh, there's the WNBA again, right? But she stepped up to the, you know, NBA three-point line. You know, she shot with the WNBA ball. There's no problem. And she put up the same score that would have won the contest on the men's side. And then Steph Curry, who had basically everything to lose, right? Because if he loses, oh, my God, he lost to a WNBA player. Like, what's going on here? He shows out and gets a 29, which was 3 points better than Damian Lillard's championship. And the fact that Curry went out there and performed the way he performed when he had everything to lose, you know, there's a competitive pride there, right? Where you're not nervous if you lose. Like, that's the whole thing with the dunk contest. All these guys are so concerned about their personal brand, and if they lose something, then it's going to tarnish their brand. Well, you know what's going to really elevate your brand? Actually giving a shit and having some pride, and then maybe you're actually going to win. Like, that was great. But everything else was just such a disaster. And this is on, you know, I bag on LeBron, but LeBron is to blame for this. And Adam Silver, I think, is to blame for this, you know, tenfold.
Right.
This doesn't happen under David Stern.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen under Kobe either. So let's make the All-Star game great again. Let's figure out whatever. I'm sure Bill Simmons is going to release something today with some really competitive incentive structure.
He did. Well, good. He did. Hold on. He released a video about just taking away the 3-point shots. And I'm just like, well, we can't do that because then it's not a basketball game.
Yeah. I don't know. Guys just have to try.
But guys have to care to try. And Adam Silver should stop being buddy-buddy with the players and stop trying to be their best friend and actually be their boss.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. So embarrassing. I hated 98% of what happened this weekend. But anyway, we're going to move on. You had 5 burning questions, one of them being the Knicks. So we'll save that for last. 5 burning questions going into the post All-Star break NBA season. So kick us off with your first question.
My first question is, been the team I've been kind of most curious about all year has been the Warriors. I first was curious about them simply because I was like, how is Chris Paul going to fit on their team? And then I don't even really remember Chris Paul being on their team because I feel like he's been injured or not really had an impact on this team.
And now
they've unlocked something sneaky good here with limiting Klay Thompson, second member of the Splash Brothers minutes, to this former G League guy who is just makes his team work a lot better. And then you bench Looney, who you won a ring with 2 years ago as like, you need size to be at the 5, and Looney is that guy and he played great. And now you benched him and you're putting Draymond at the 5, and then Kuminga, who in the middle of the season is like, I need to get traded. And then all of a sudden averages like 20 points a game over his last whatever games. And they unlock something beautiful. But like, my question is, how far can they move up in the West? But the problem is, moving up in the West is impossible because who's going to lose? Like, everyone's looking at the Pelicans like, oh, that's the team to drop. But like maybe they drop, but they don't. They like if you look at every team in the West and they're the top like eight, like their last 10 games record is just like these teams don't lose that much. They're really good. Well, they're really good, these teams.
Yeah, so let's take a look. Golden State right now at the break is 27-26. They were 8-2 in their last 10 to get them there. And they sit 10th in the West. They have a 2.5 game cushion on the Jazz for the last play-in spot. So if you're going to take a look at, you know, a lot of people are looking at the Sacramento Kings, who've kind of hit a rough patch a little bit, but they're 31-23. They've got a 3.5 game lead on the Warriors. And, you know, they've been middling, but they're 5-5 in their last 10, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Dallas Mavericks, 32-23. I don't necessarily love them this year. But they played.
They're hot right now.
They've won six or seven, three in their last 10. The Pelicans have won 3 in a row, 7-3 in their last 10. I think Golden State's going to be ultra dangerous, you know, with Pajemski coming on. Kuminga and Wiggins, the pairing has actually looked better lately. They can actually play them together. You know, Draymond at the 5 has unlocked them. Steph is still a top 5 player in the league. But I'm not sure if they're going to be able to get into the top 6 and avoid the
Yeah. Point. Yeah. I think one, just them, they like, I listen to Draymond Green's podcast, and they really care about the regular season, the Warriors, which I think has really unlocked this, which we're going back to what we're talking about before, has really unlocked the season. But so that's great. But I think their ultimate question mark is like, who is the second main scorer? Because like with if Clay has an off night, like you're missing a lot of points from those championship runs. Like you don't have KD anymore. Wiggins, when they won the finals a few years ago, was their second best player, and I don't know if that Wiggins is ever coming back. So you kind of need Kuminga to make it up, and is he going to be reliable in the playoffs and in more intense games when kind of transition closes up, and that's kind of the best part of his game. So I actually think they really do need Clay to play well, and they need Clay to, right before All-Star break, I think Clay had like 34, 36 points when the one game he came off the bench. I think they really need Clay to perform, and kind of Clay figuring that out later in his career is going to be kind of a cool thing here. And we're going to have to see. It's going to be really interesting, and they're going to go for it. Like, they're going to go hard. This is a team that thinks they could win the finals, and they have Draymond Green, so they're ultimately a competitive team.
For the Warriors, their big thing is they need to get above the 9 or 10 spot where they're in the loser's bracket in the play-in tournament. Like, if they get to 7 or 8, I mean, you saw with the Lakers last year. The Lakers got to 7, you know, they were able to make a conference finals run, right? You're not going to be able to do that being in the 9-10 spot. So can they catch the Sacramento Kings or the Dallas Mavericks? Maybe. But the Lakers are also playing decent ball right now. Like, now, I don't think D'Angelo Russell can sustain his level of play in terms of shooting the basketball. So, you know, their offense, I'm not sure, is sustainable. But they're 7-3 in their last 10. And you know, those two are going to – one of them right now is going to knock the other one out. So if you think either of these two teams can make a run, a playoff run, like as it stands right now, it can't be both of them because one is getting knocked out by the other.
Yeah, it's cool. This is a really cool thing. And then I think a lot of people are going to ultimately write off the Thunder and Wolves. If they play the Lakers or Warriors in the first round, everyone's going to be like, oh, well, just like last year, the Warriors and Lakers were lower seeds. They're going to knock off the higher seeds. But the Wolves are legit. The Thunder, I think are really, really good. I don't know if they could beat the Warriors or Lakers when they're playing their primetime basketball in a playoff series. But these teams, they're not going to go down easily. I think they're way better than Memphis, and I think they're better than the Kings were last year. So I think these two teams are a major upgrade from last year's playoffs. So I don't think you could just go and get a really low seed in the playoffs and just expect a cakewalk in your first round. It's gonna, especially the Wolves. I mean, I don't know if you're beating them.
I agree with you about the Thunder and the Wolves, you know, comparing them to last year's top seeds like Memphis. Like, these teams were better than Memphis was last year, especially, you know, with Memphis stumbling, you know, with the injury thing down the stretch. I agree with you there. I just – the Warriors, they may have dug themselves too big of a hole to really make a run at it. But if Kuminga continues to play like he's playing, like, there's your secondary scoring. And he also, besides for just that, he also, you know, provides a physicality, you know, a physicality and an athleticism that the Warriors really need, you know, being an older team. So,
right. Do you ever, the way when I watch Kuminga, the way, like, he's just trying to pin everyone under the basket for, like, a turnaround dunk. I love that. Like, have you ever played against, like, one of these, like, older guys in life who just, like, they have a little weight on you and they're just trying to pin you down under the basket for a post-up every time? Like, it's so annoying. You have to battle them, but you kind of, like, after the game, you kind of respect them because, like, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily play a pickup game by just trying to pin someone to the basket that way, but, like, it's a pretty effective way to play, and no one really tries to do it anymore. And it's pretty hard to stop if the guy actually has the size. So Kuminga is just trying to pin every guy under the basket. It's awesome in post-up opportunities.
Yeah, and he jumps through the roof. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go. I'm gonna have a hard time thinking that they can get up to six because I think it's just too many teams that they have to jump. Like, I know we talked about Sacramento, and obviously the shine is a little bit off Sacramento. Last year was great. They end the playoff drought, light the beam, the whole thing. They basically have the same record at this time, this year as they did last year. And last year they were the three seed. So, like, it's just a different gauntlet this year, the Western Conference.
Totally.
All right, so that's the Warriors. What's your second your second burning question?
Yeah, so my next question will be another team. I don't know if it's as interesting as the Warriors, but something I'm personally curious about is the Indiana Pacers. Like, they're kind of haven't fully settled into how good they are because they just got Siakam, who's a stud, and just the brand of Haliburton was injured a little, and just the brand of basketball he brings to that team, and they just got rid of Hield and just settling who they are as a basketball team. Like, and with the East kind of being wide open, really, as we've seen it in a while, like, there's no guarantees in the East you could throw out the window. Can they make either – the question is, I guess, a great seed, a really high seed in the East, or even a deep playoff run? I think they're – even the people always write off young teams pretty easily. Like, oh, they're having a nice season. This is their first year ever doing it. Cool.
That's the history of the league.
The data does say that, but is this team gonna make some noise?
It's kind of hard to get a sense when you make a big trade mid-season, you know, bringing in a guy like Siakam, regardless of how the fit is. Like, it still takes time to gel, right? And especially when he first got there, Haliburton missed a couple of games. Like, it's just going to take some time. Like, do I think that they could be dangerous? I mean, offensively, they're tremendously dangerous. I just don't think they're good enough defensively.
Yeah, that'll be the biggest thing, especially in the playoffs, because you can't play that high. You can't play that high tempo of the basketball in the playoffs and score as many points as you do in the regular season. And then Haliburton, like his level of play is just sometimes at such a high superstar level where, like, is this guy going to be able to do it in the playoffs? I mean, I think he will definitely over time and throughout his career, but I don't know if he's ready necessarily this year. But with all that said, I do think they're going to make a big push in the Eastern Conference and go on a nice winning streak and really might take over some of these 3-4 seeds, which is obviously scary for my Knicks. But I think they could go on a big run right now in a crippled Eastern Conference.
Well, they're 3 in the loss behind Philly, and, you know, unfortunately with Embiid, like, you know, just absolutely crippling their season, and he's going to be out for a while. But They could jump to five. I mean, depending on the Knicks being healthy, like the Knicks are still 2.5 up on them at the fourth seed. Milwaukee, as weird as they've been, they're still 4 games up. Like, they may be slotted in here, you know, in either the 5 or the 6. And then it's just about, like, you know, they've handled Milwaukee in the regular season. So would they want to do some careful jockeying to try and stay aligned with Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of that at the end of with the East. I think they're probably going to want to avoid the Celtics because that's a lot. They have a lot to throw at Halliburton. I would probably want to avoid the Heat. And the 13, I'd probably want to avoid the Knicks. Just the Knicks are going to make your life a living hell in the playoffs, just how hard they play and how many defenders they can throw at you with versatility. So, yeah, if they get the matchup, and the Milwaukee has everything. I'm sure we'll get to Milwaukee later. They have everything to lose. Lillard's career reputation on the line, Doc's career reputation on the line, Giannis's career reputation on the line. And there's just so much on the line for them versus a free-flowing Pacers team. I always try to pick the free-flowing team because I think playing a looser brand of basketball sometimes just makes the rims look a little wider in these type of games.
Yeah, we're going to get to Milwaukee in just a second, but Indiana, they're exciting, but as we've seen, you know, the game slows down because when teams, I know we talked about how competitive the regular season has been for the most part, but when you really lock in, like when everybody's going to get in a defensive stance, when everybody's actually going to, you know, focus on a scouting report, when you can really scheme for players, like that's when you see who the dudes are and who the dudes aren't. And it'll be interesting to see with Indiana. I mean, Halliburton's never played in the playoffs before, so it's a whole different beast.
Yeah. Just I think that's one to flag. My next question, going away from teams, I think this one, I don't even have an answer for. I need help. Is who's going to win MVP this year? Like, there's just you have to dismiss Embiid, which now everyone is crying about the 65-game rule, but now kind of makes sense that he's going to miss probably a lot more than he's going to play a lot less than 65 games. So who is going to win MVP of the NBA this season? And Jokic's team is kind of flattering a little, and he's just kind of coasting through the regular season as maybe he should be.
But it's funny you say that, because the Nuggets are essentially the same team as they were at this time last year also. They're 30.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Yeah, they'll be fine. And, yeah, I guess we'll have to see. There's just maybe some if with a Thunder finishing at 2, that the NBA loves the storyline, maybe you give the nod to Shea. Or if the Mavericks keep it up, maybe Luka gets his first MVP. So there's just I don't know the answer to this one, how it's going to turn out.
To me, it's probably going to, you know, I think the top 3 guys are Jokic, SGA, and Giannis in some order. I mean, Giannis is putting up like a 31-11-6. You know, and the team's playing 625 basketball, as weird as they've been. And he covers up a lot of holes for them. And to his credit, he plays hard every single night. Like, he's a crazy person. But if Denver's going to have a similar record to what they did last year when they were the 1 seed, and Jokic is the best player in the league, then he's my default pick.
Yeah, I just don't think it has a razzle and dazzle to it that people would be excited about giving him MVP, which is for better or worse, sometimes the reason why teams get MVP. I just think it's very open, and it's very open to like a team like making an explosive second half of the season, like Dallas, like just crushes it. Luka keeps it playing amazing, and they're like, we want to give it to you, not the. Old and boring Jokic.
The door is definitely open. Yeah, I agree with you about the MVP. It's wide open. If a guy like Luka goes on a crazy run, maybe he can get in the mix. I'm just not sure he's going to have enough wins. I mean, the other guy is Kawhi. Like, why are we dismissing Kawhi? He's been awesome, But I ultimately just default that if Jokic is going to have a similar record to what he had last year, then I think he's going to get it. And that may be boring, but you know what? He's the best player in the league, or the second best player in the league, depending on how you want to slice it. And I don't think that's crazy. All right. So burning question number four.
Mm-hmm. Burning question number four is what we were mentioning before, the Milwaukee Bucks. What is this team? I think before the season, to set the table, if everyone thought this would just work out. You have Giannis, who was missing kind of like his end of game scoring counterpart, Dame, perfect fit for Giannis. People were super excited, just plug him in, and then this team is exactly what he needed. It obviously hasn't worked out that way, and they kind of had a wacky thing going with their were winning, changed their coach for some, I still don't know the reason, to be honest. And now are with Doc Rivers. They're 3-7 in their last 10. And something is just doesn't smell right. And I have major questions on Dame. I have questions on Middleton. Is he the same guy? Because if you really look back to the year that they won, I give a lot of credit to Middleton there. He hit all the big shots. And sometimes championships come down to these tiny little details that no one remembers, except for the people who are crazy like us and watch the highlights of these games way too many times. And Dame did a lot of, Middleton did a lot of big things in those games. And where is he? Brook Lopez, 1 year older. What is going on there?
Yeah, Milwaukee to me is the weirdest team in the league. I mean, they are 35-21, but they're 3-7 in their last 10. They've lost two straight. Their defense, which was absolutely abhorrent, has gotten better. But their offense, that was like at a historic rate, you know, has come back down to earth a little bit, even with the offense being really good. And they do have some good advanced metrics, which suggest that this should turn around. It just doesn't seem like the synergy between Giannis and Dame is really where it needs to be. I think Giannis is a little resistant in terms of just setting screens and diving to the rim the entire time. I think he wants to do other things with the ball, which he's definitely earned. And I think Lillard's having to adjust to being sort of secondary because he's never done that before. And Middleton hasn't really, you know, who's kind of like the glue, but he hasn't really been available because of injuries. So what version of this team are we going to get? Because the high-end theoretical version of this team should win the East. And their ceiling is still there, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's so weird because this really tarnishes Dame's career, because everyone loved Damian Lillard on the Blazers, and he was clutch. He did everything right. He brought them to Western Conference Finals, and then kind of when you go to the team, because there were no expectations with the Blazers, and now when you go to the team where like, okay, this should work, it's not working, and this is just like tarnishing his career. You just hunt him for mismatches. He's a streaky shooter. He's not a great playmaker. Just all these different things that you could say about him, but for it to not work. And my theory is, all ironically enough, is that Doc Rivers is the worst choice for this. Doc Rivers, he had last year a very talented team. He had a guy who he clearly didn't utilize. I know Harden is you hate Harden, and Harden's difficult enough, but he also had Maxey, and Maxey wasn't unlocked like he was last year. And you could say that's on Harden. Now he has the keys to the team, but clearly something wasn't working last year. But I think Doc Rivers is the worst at this. He's the worst at figuring this out. He figured it out once because of our guy Thibodeau. He won one championship in 2008 because our guy Thibodeau literally and KG we're committed to having one of the best defensive teams of all time. I don't think he's good at putting together talent. I don't think he gets the most out of his guys. I don't think he's creative. I don't think he's a good coach, and I think he's the worst possible coach for this team, and I think karma is going to bite them because they should have just kept Budenholzer when it's all said and done, and this just makes no sense. A lot of things smell fishy, and I just don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, the Doc thing is interesting. So we've seen Doc be good with stars, right? He's done well with stars. He also, does...
But never good enough.
Right.
With the Clippers, he failed. With the Clippers, they didn't get a ring, and they were an unbelievable team. With Philly, they didn't... They really underperformed, if you ask me, with having the type of seasons that Embiid and Harden were having some years with his team. I don't think he's ever... And he did it in Boston. I know it was injuries, but he had the one season. But if you really, really look at that season... To me, it's more of credit to KG and Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, well, you know, with the Clippers, Doc had, there were some weird fluky injuries there. But no, he's definitely underperformed since the KG Celtics era days. But like what he does do well is get some type of defensive identity. And, you know, the Bucks have been better defensively. You know, he's not necessarily the most creative guy offensively, which I think we're seeing as the, you know, as I mentioned, that the defense has gotten better, but the offense has gotten a little bit worse in terms of rating. I mean, he's a charismatic guy, right? And everybody loves him. He's very likable, which is why he keeps getting these chances. I'm not sure I necessarily would have gone that route. But again, they kind of boxed themselves into a corner because the Adrian Griffin thing wasn't working. It just wasn't, right? The players, there was a lack of respect there. It was started out weird when they, you know, he dismissed Terry Stotts, like, before the season started. Like, I think there was a little bit of an ego trip thing with him, and that wasn't working. So I'm all for pulling the plug on Adrian Griffin. And at that point, like, as weird as it sounds, like, Doc was kind of the best scenario in terms of trying to salvage this season. But had they... It all would have been different had they just hired Nick Nurse instead.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? He's doing a great job. Yeah. A lot of wrong moves. I think people blame it on Giannis that he's trying to be like the GM type guy. And I don't know, something smells fishy, but they could, on the other side of things, they could just figure it out and Giannis could set 30 ball screens and knock Dame's man out, and Dame could just get really, really hot at the right time, and this could just work, and everything could just kind of fall into place. I don't think that's going to happen because of their defense. I just think they have some older legs compared to, like, if I was the Knicks, I want to play you. Like, I think we're younger. I think we're going to play harder. I think we're going to build a wall against Giannis. Like, I think we have everything we need to play to beat Milwaukee. I'm not scared of you.
The only thing is that the Knicks never beat Milwaukee when they played them.
Yeah, we got Rock, except for that one game.
It's the only problem. They basically never play them well, and Giannis, for whatever reason, maybe it's just a matchup thing, just destroys the Knicks.
Yeah, but we have a new team, OG. Yeah, that I definitely hear that point. But I think I'm not as worried as I would be a little bit more scared playing Miami and the Celtics.
I think that's your last burning question with the Knicks, correct?
Yeah. It's like,
all right, let's do it. What's your burning question?
What is going to be of this team? We need the injuries. Thibodeau needs to stop injuring our players by playing them 46 minutes a game every single night of the week. We need to get healthy, and we're young. We have legs. We play defense. I don't think anyone, whoever plays the seven game series is going to get beaten up. But the question is, who is Julius Randle? Like, what version of him are we going to get? Tibbs sometimes looks like the best coach the NBA has, like, ever seen. And sometimes he looks like, in a playoff series, wait, are we really running an isolation again for Julius Randle or Jalen Brunson? And that's all we could come out with out of this timeout. But with OG, it's way more of a natural fit than RJ Barrett. And our thing is just going to fall into place here, and we're going to look like an amazing team. And I think I'm not even asking any questions on Brunson, because Brunson is our 1A, and other teams 1A's sound fancy. You have Jason Tatum, you have Giannis, you have you have Jimmy Butler, and I'm not discounting them at all being great, but Jalen Brunson, when you need a bucket, and he proved this last year in the playoffs, he's not stepping down. He is could be a 1A, which sounds crazy considering what people were thinking about two summers ago, but it's a blessing, and it's really an amazing thing. The Knicks, even with Melo, we didn't have this type of consistency and playmaking ability. So it's exciting. So now Tibbs and Randle, what are you going to be like in the big regular season games? What are you going to be like in the playoff games? And how is this all going to end? Because I'm way too anxious and excited about this.
So I talked about this a little bit last week, but I'm with you. I'm with you on the Knicks. I know they've gotten hit with the injury bug terribly last couple of weeks, and they needed the All-Star break as much as anybody, right? I mean, they've lost four in a row. They're 5-5 in their last 10, but again, lost four in a row because they just don't have dudes, right? OG Anunoby, I'm not sure when he's coming back. Randle eventually will get back. I can't believe I'm saying this, that this Knicks team could win the East. They could. But my biggest thing with the Knicks is the bromance between Randle and the coach. And will the coach have the stones to play Randle a different way, to actually discipline Randle when things aren't going his way, and even sit him down for a guy like Bogdanovich to play him and OG as the two forwards? Will he have the stones to actually do that? You know, the Knicks have these ingredients. You can argue whether they used their, you know, sold low on a couple of their assets, and like, could they have done better than, you know, with Fournier's contract and a couple of the young guys than Bogdanovich? Like, maybe you can argue that right now, but whatever. They're in win now mode. The Knicks have a win now roster. But will the coach be able to cook the meal properly and use the right amount of the ingredients properly and pull the right strings? And I'm still dubious. And maybe Brunson is so good that that won't even matter. But it's that gives me pause.
Right. Yeah, totally. It's nerve-wracking. We have to see how.
And if there was ever the year for them to do it, it's this year, because I know what the advanced stats say on Boston, but like, their late game execution in terms of the shots they get, I don't love it. And like, they're just not tough dudes. Like, Boston doesn't want to get into a bar fight. The Knicks will bring a bar fight.
Right.
I'm not sure Cleveland wants a bar fight. We saw that last year.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
The one team that I'm still nervous about is the Miami Heat.
Yeah, they're going to turn it around. And even if they don't even turn around in the regular season, you saw their ability to snap their fingers in the playoffs, which is just wild what they did last year in the playoffs when they're in the brink of not even getting past the playing game. All of a sudden, they did what they did. But the Knicks, another thing I don't love is I like teams having time to kind of figure it out with new guys. So we need with everyone healthy. And that's something that's not really on our side right now. I know I think everyone likes Bogdanovich. We have to see where he's at with defense. That's going to be the biggest thing with him. And then people have their thing against Burke. Some people, I don't love him because I have too much PTSD from seeing him just take terrible shots on bad teams for way too long. But maybe we plug him in at the right minutes when we just say, hey, you're with the bench guys. We just need buckets. Go do you. And it works. But we need some health. We really need some health and guys just to come back and play together and just kind of figure it all out in battle-tested games.
Alec Burks for 15 minutes a game off the bench playing shooting guard? Good. Alec Burks coming off the bench playing any point guard minutes or playing more than 15 to 20 minutes a game? Bad. Very bad.
Totally. I agree.
It's just crazy because, you know, the OG thing, and I kind of poo-pooed the trade a little bit because I think people talk about OG Anunoby as a star and like whatever, he's 15-5-5 for his career, something like that. But like the fit here was so seamless, something that I kind of underestimated, even though that I liked the trade because RJ Barrett needed to go, but whatever. If they get him back, like they could really do something because you saw what they were doing when he was playing. Even when Randle was out, like in the couple of games, like it didn't matter.
He's literally perfect. Like he's literally the perfect like third or fourth guy on what you want to build on like a championship team these days. Just like a guy who doesn't need the ball, he cuts, he hits the open shot, he doesn't complain, and then he just plays so hard it makes the other player, no matter who it is, at any positions, life so difficult that you just never want to see him again. And even with these modern NBA offenses where all they run is pick and rolls, they don't seem to affect him. He gets picked and like he's so long, like he just recovers with you, or like he gets picked and his arms are so long, like you don't have a shot off the screen like you do on other type of guys. So it's just such an amazing piece that I didn't realize how good he was, to be honest, because I just don't watch that many Raptor games. Maybe now I watch a few more just to laugh at Quickly. I mean, I love Quickly, but to kind of laugh at Barrett driving left when the left lane isn't open for a few more times just to get that last laugh. But this is just an awesome thing we have going.
My thing with Anunoby was that obviously being a pending free agent, but I think there's a wink-wink deal where I think he's going to re-sign, you know, CAA La Familia Knicks. They take care of their guys, right? The thing was with him was it seemed like he had worn out his welcome in Toronto because he wanted a bigger role. He wanted to expand his game. And the Knicks, you know, Brunson's going to have a lot of possessions. Randle, if he's still there, which is why I ultimately think for the Knicks to take the next step, Randle and maybe Tibbs has to go. But one of them is, and preferably Randle has to go, and the chain just needs to be broken. But if Randall's going to be around, like he's going to soak up a lot of possessions. Is OG going to be the happy camper doing what he's doing, right?
Right.
While getting the love from MSG. It's going to be weird, but you know, we'll focus on that in the offseason and going forward. Like right now, because of the way the East is, they really have a shot at this. So I guess we'll let you go on this. If you had to power rank the top three teams you're scared of in the East for the Knicks, in order, in a playoff series, how would it look?
In order would have to be the Celtics, just because I don't want to see Drew Holiday guarding my precious Jalen Brunson for longer than one game. This guy is just such a crazy defender. Then probably the playoff version of the Heat, just because I think they'll match our intensity and they'll just come together. And I think a lot of things are going to start clicking for them. And they have the young gun who's really good. And they have Rozier, who just feels like a perfect Heat player who's going to like, his career is all of a sudden going to come alive again in a complete Heat way. And then my third, just because as you mentioned, I don't want to face a healthy Embiid by any means. In the way Maxey's playing, I think we would have a lot of trouble with that. But I think it has to be the Bucks, just the way we've played them. And at the end of the day, Giannis is Giannis.
So we have basically the same order, and I am very close to putting the Heat on par with the Celtics because I have so much respect for that organization. I have so much respect for the coach. I know Jimmy Butler's not playing now because he's dealing with the death in the family, but I have so much respect for him because when it becomes playoff time, like, he turns into like Michael Jordan mixed with Kawhi Leonard. Like, that's freaking sick. This is a really weird East. It's a really weird East, but yeah, I'm with you in terms of that order.
And the last thing, the Celtics, my thinking about them is that I think they are so thin in their depth in their bench core, which just doesn't feel good going to playoffs. If I was like Peyton Pritchard, if you are on the court, Jalen Brunson is going to find you. He's going to post you up, and he is going to score. So he's a massive issue that they're playing all these guys. So if the Celtics get into foul trouble or get one minor ankle tweak, I think their whole and also their depth in the front court is, like, if Porzingis gets injured, which he always does, like, you're once again relying on a year older Al Horford to hone down the paint. So I just don't necessarily I don't think they address those issues in a strong enough way. So we'll see there.
Well, they just didn't have the assets to move.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw something come across my phone, a funny tweet. The only way for Adam Silver to fix the All-Star game is to leak the losing team's Instagram DMs. I mean, that would be pretty fantastic. But yeah, just to tie a bow on this one, Johnny, this was great, bud. Thanks so much for, I don't want to say coercing me to do it, but reaching out and make sure I was on my game and not taking a week off. I think we definitely needed this therapy session regarding All-Star Weekend because it's just – it used to be, like, something we look forward to. And
yeah.
Like, I turned it off in the middle to catch up on the latest comings of The Bachelor. Like, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, let's make it great again. It was great coming on, and next time I see a pressing emergency podcast, we'll definitely hit it. So
and we'll have to talk Knicks right before the playoffs to see how we're feeling. John, this was great. I'll speak to you soon. Sure. Thanks so much, buddy. Later. Thanks again to recurring guest Johnny Nolman for coming on, talking a little bit about the All-Star Weekend, talking a little bit about post All-Star Weekend NBA thoughts. I'm still really annoyed about what took place this weekend. I know I talked about it on the monologue. I don't want to do it all over again, but it really sucked. It was just an absolute embarrassment. But anyway, that's episode 244 for the love of the game. Take us out, Ludie.
What you keep in your house? What about diamonds and gold? Is that what you keep in your mouth? What in the world is in that case? What you got in that case? Get up out my face. You couldn't relate. Wait to take place at a similar pace. So shake and
roll, got my swing. Out. Business. Stay the f*** about my business. Cause these f***s all up in my head and it's my business. Stay the f*** about my business. Cause it's mine, oh my business, my business. Stay the f*** about my business.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.